Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to the marvelous Jesse and Chris. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Chris.
And with the power of the internet connecting Kansas City and Cape Girardeau, we bring you the best comic show on the Podzilla 1985 network. Hey, Chris, how you doing, man?
Hey, doing pretty good, Jesse. Ready to talk about some comics?
Oh, I'm always ready to talk about some comics. But first, let's get to these fan questions.
All right, sounds good.
All right, so our first question comes from Zach Price. His question was, the best place to get copies of Bob's Burgers? Nobody around here has them.
Bob's Burgers, huh? Well, I would say, if you cannot find them around you, you probably aren't asking the right questions.
What do you think, Jesse? True story. I hadn't actually known that Bob's Burgers was a running comment, so I thought he was just asking a sarcastic question. I responded with Netflix.
Where do you get Bob's Burgers? It's a it's a fictional burger joint. You actually cannot buy them.
To answer your question, Zach, the best way to get comics in general, head to your local shop. You can actually create a pull list there, and it's completely free to do. You just tell them you want a pull list. Write down what comics you want. Every month, they order that comic for you, or every 2 weeks, you know, however often it releases. They order that comic for you, and they set it back, and you can buy it at your convenience. It's actually a pretty fantastic deal, the best way to get comics for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. See, I think a lot of people think that you have to almost, like, subscribe or pay an extra fee for the store to pull your books for you. And I guess I could see how you'd think that. But really, for the store, that's guaranteed repeated business. So they will always set up a pull list for you. They will be happy to do so with no extra charge. A lot of times, depending on the store, they'll also throw in benefits for pull list customers. For example, at my place, Pulp Fiction in Lee Summit, whenever Free Comic Book Day came out, they kind of knew my tastes, and they pulled a couple of those free comic books and put them in my box, just assuming I'd want them. And because by the time I got there, it had been raided, and I was not going to get the comic book I wanted. And they said, "Hey, Chris, we figured you'd like this," and popped a little copy of that All New Avengers in my box. So the membership has its privileges, as they say.
Oh, most definitely, and yeah, the friendship, the relationship you form with your local comic shop owner is one of the best parts of it, because you can go in there, you know, if there's a new comic coming out that they think you might be interested in, like this happened to me more than a few times at Coffee's, like the local comic shop here, he told me about a new book that had characters that I liked in it, and I had me pull it, or asked if I would want him to pull it for me. So on top of, you know, getting the comics you want, being able to pick them up whenever you want, they can also throw recommendations at you so you aren't missing out on anything you might possibly want in the future.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They are usually the best people for that. Especially, you know, once you find a really good comic book store that you like the manager at my comic book store always knows what I like, always tells me good things, and he knows it all. So, like, once you find, like, if you can find a store like that, and just keep, like, when you find a good comic book store, I'd say, like, latch onto it and just start a pull list with them, and they will always help you out if you are looking for some good comics.
Most definitely. And they're super patient on, you know, if you can't pick it up right away, you know, they'll hold on to it for you for as long as you need. Like, they won't get rid of that book unless you give them permission to do so.
Yeah.
Which is just great. And around here in Cape, Zach, I know you live here in town. The two shops that you have available to you are Coffee's Comics and Games, now located behind Muy Bueno on Independence. And then there's the Comic Strip on Broadway, literally like right across the street from Burritoville. Both are awesome places.
Awesome places. I used to go to Comic Strip. I don't know if he still does it, but he used to do 10% off if you had like a regular pull with him.
Yeah. He also does, like, if you have a student ID, he'll do 10% off for you. Yeah, Andrew's a pretty cool guy. I hear he's especially cool if you set up a pull list with him.
Yeah, he is a very membership has its privileges kind of manager.
Yes. All right. So go ahead and move to Dylan Diebold. Shout out to Dylan. Haven't seen you in the store in a while, buddy. You should come in and say hi. What are the odds of Batman versus Superman being a victory for Batman, or vice versa, coming from comics and possibly past video series examples of The Dark Knight Returns?
Well, so if it's a Batman story, Batman always wins. That's a superpower. And especially, like, okay, in Hush, Superman fights Batman, Batman wins. In Dark Knight Returns, the comic, Superman fights Batman, Batman wins. In Dark Knight Returns, the movie, the animated movie, Superman fights Batman, Batman wins. However, technically, the Batman vs. Superman movie is kind of a Superman movie, because it's a sequel to Superman. It seems a little bit like it's both, but this movie isn't really like a definitive ending. It's more of a beginning. It's going to be a definitive stalemate. I'm calling it right now.
Well, almost certainly. I feel like there will be a greater evil show itself, and Superman will have to prove himself as a good person. Batman will trust him. They'll team up, take out the bad guy.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of those. I know that the best comic book question that everybody asks is who would win in a fight between X and X, but in this case, I think it's gonna be a pretty definitive stalemate. It'd be weird if they had one of them win. I mean, I guess I could see Batman winning and then seeing like, and maybe he's like about to finish off Superman somehow. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you do it without kryptonite if you're Batman, but and then be like, no, like he's good. I have to trust him or something. I don't know.
Christian Bale's not going to be in this one, man. Just
yeah. I haven't heard enough growl from Batfleck. Well, I don't think he's going to growl. I mean, he's got the only Batman voice I think I've heard from Batfleck is the kind of deep robot voice.
Right. And I mean, obviously that's going to sound different because it's, you know, robot voice. But yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of with Chris on this one. It's probably going to be a stalemate. I mean, we talked about it in the store numerous times, like who would win in a fight between Batman and Superman. And yeah, like Chris said, in a Batman book, that's a superpower. He always wins. But give Superman, like if Batman isn't aware it's going to happen, I stand by my decision. And Superman's okay with killing. If Superman just decided in an instant, I think I'm going to kill Batman, it would happen.
Right.
I don't think there'd be any stopping that. I'm pretty sure that would just happen. But anyway, next one from Asa Gray. You guys should do an expose on why Diamond is literally worse than Hitler.
Oh man, Diamond is terrible. It's Diamond. Oh man, they've got like a pretty clear monopoly on the market. They're like cable company bad.
Yeah, easily. And on top of that, like they very rarely actually deliver on what they say they're gonna do.
I know, it's as if you were like, all right, I'm gonna get a pizza, and you give me half of the pizza with the wrong toppings.
Yeah. I also hate Diamond. They've been a source of immense frustration for me as a comic book purchaser, especially someone that occasionally dabbles in more obscure comic books, because that seems to be where Diamond fails the hardest. And I guess for those of you that don't know and couldn't pick it up from what Chris said, Diamond is pretty much the only comic book distributor. So any local comic shop, they have to purchase their comic books from someone. And in this area, Diamond is it. That's the only person you can buy from.
Right, like you don't buy comics from Marvel or DC. You have to buy them through that which distributes it. Because Marvel and DC don't have delivery trucks. Man, wouldn't that be cool? You driving down the street and a big old Marvel truck drives by.
Oh, that would be awesome. So yeah, you can think of Diamond as the middleman. Whenever, you know, comics are sent to the shops, they come via Diamond. And yeah, they're awful with shipping, they're awful with orders, they're just plain awful, but there's literally no other option.
It's that or buy digital, I guess.
Right, and I mean, as much as I love digital comics, I cannot justify spending exactly the same amount for a digital copy that I would for a physical copy.
Yeah, and then you're not supporting your local comic book store. Even the it's like Diamond just hates everyone. They just want to see the world burn.
Which, leading back to the original question, Diamond hates everyone. They want to see the world burn. Hitler, as far as I remembered, only hated the minorities.
I mean, he did hate a lot of people.
He hated a lot of people, but he didn't hate everyone. And that makes Diamond worse than Hitler.
literally worse than Hitler. is it worse than clones of Hitler, like from Archer?
Those are the best.
I think Archer does have the best clones of Hitler.
That's really true. Krieger is by far my favorite character on that show. I'll be honest. Sure. I love Krieger. All right, before that happens, let's not let that let's not take that train track. That's a massive derailment. So moving on, Shannon Young, owner and proprietor of Podzilla 1985. His question this week is, what is the best non-DC or Marvel comic going right now, and why is it Ninja Turtles?
Why is it Ninja Turtles? I do not currently read Ninja Turtles, but I hear the IDW Ninja Turtles is pretty good. That's what I hear.
All I've heard is just phenomenal from the IDW Ninja Turtles, but yeah, I also haven't read it. One that I have read that I did really enjoy that's not Marvel or DC and is really popular is Saga from Image Publishing.
Yeah, Brian K. Vaughan with the writing and the fantastic Fiona Staples on art. I enjoy Saga. I think I need to pick it back up again. I read the first two volumes and was really into it, and it kind of reached a slow point, and I was not into that, so I quit reading it. Gotcha. But I probably need to jump back on it again. I mean, it still continues to win Eisner Award after Eisner Award. My favorite comic book that is not Marvel or DC right now is called Black Science. Jesse, have you read any Black Science?
I can't say that I have.
It's by Rick Remender, and what did Rick Remender do fairly recently? Uncanny Avengers on Marvel. He did this the Uncanny X-Force series a few years ago, which had the best Deadpool ever. He did Captain America fairly recently, but he's taken a bit of a Marvel hiatus, probably to write Black Science. But Black Science is kind of... Did you ever see the show Sliders, Jesse?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like violent Sliders. These people are kind of trapped and they have to keep traveling in dimensions, but everything in the dimension is always trying to kill them.
That sounds fantastic, because I was a huge fan of Sliders, which, for those of you too young or have never heard of this, it was an old sci-fi television show with these group of guys that were traveling to all these different dimensions where it was very similar to their own dimension, which is our dimension, but with slight subtle changes in history that, you know, could make something huge happen.
Right, but it's just, like, even, like, the storytelling is amazing, and it's, like, nonstop. There's no, like, what's, like, my big rule of comics is above all else, do not be boring, and this is literally never boring. It is just always nonstop, and Matteo Scalera, who does the art, is probably one of my favorite artists right now, and the colors, who are done by one Dean White, are fantastic. So I'm a pretty big fan of Black Science. A lot of people like Saga. A lot of people really like this comic called Sex Criminals, which is better than it sounds. It's actually really funny. It's not about what you think. It's not like it's not like SVU. It's about people who are able to stop time after, let's say, adult activities, and then they use that ability to rob banks and stuff. It's by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky, and it is really, really funny. And they do, like, fun gimmicks. Like, this last issue that came out, if you got the blank variant cover, you know, sometimes they do completely blank variant covers. Hmm. There was, like, a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 chance that Chip Zdarsky did a sketch on the front of it in marker. Oh. But it was a different sketch every time.
Right. That's pretty awesome.
Right, so if you got one of those, you got, like, an ultra-unique comic. Now, the thing about Image, I think even more than IDW, is since they're completely creator-owned, they just kind of come out whenever, which is usually kind of regularly, but sometimes you get those big, long hiatuses. So, I mean, that's kind of up to you. But, like, Black Science I really like. Sex Criminals is pretty good. I always read Invincible. That's always my Image comic. I've been reading it since, oh my gosh, I think, like, 2008, I think.
Told me numerous times about Invincible, and I still haven't checked it out.
It's like, have you ever wanted to have a complete superhero universe where all you had to read was one title, and that's the one. It's constantly pretty good. Some people, I think, have kind of come and gone on it, and it's had bits that are a little like dull, but at this rate I'm kind of in it for the long haul, and it's usually pretty consistently good. Like, I never feel like I've wasted my money buying it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you just really have to keep buying to see how it's going to end.
Right, and it's by the author, it's by Robert Kirkman, who does the who wrote The Walking Dead. And then the artist I really like on Invincible's name is, oh geez, what's his name? Googling real quick. I feel really bad. Corey Walker was the first artist on it, but a lot of the times now the artist is, oh my gosh, this is going to drive me crazy. I'll have to keep looking it up. Oh, Ryan Ottley does the art now, and it's very, very good. People are super into this comic by Jason Aaron, and I think it's Jason Latour. Have you heard of Southern Bastards?
Yeah.
Yeah, Southern Bastards is supposed to be really good. It doesn't release super regularly, but the art is killer. I've really only read the first issue, but it makes me want to completely get the rest of them because it is engrossing. Now, Jason Aaron's interesting. On his Marvel work, he always does, like, fairly fantastic things. Like, he writes Thor, and he wrote Wolverine and the X-Men, which is super out there. And he's going to write Doctor Strange in the fall. But, like, his creator-owned comics are usually almost like crime stories. Like, Southern Bastards is a very, like, crime boss sort of tale. Which is kind of interesting. It's interesting that, like, the different things that he writes. He used to write a comic called Scalped, which was, it was, like, crime on reservations. Hence Scalped. And people really enjoyed that too. I think those are some of the really big comics right now that people really enjoy in Image. And I've read all of those at least to some extent, so I really enjoy them. Image is really different though. Like, I know DC's trying to go for everybody has their own unique book, but Image has pretty much always has, like, everybody has your own book you want.
Right. And since a lot of the stuff in Image isn't related to anything else in Image, it's not like there's an Image universe. It's just it's its own publisher.
Right. I think there was one time where Image did crossovers with some of their superheroes, and it was a kind of a big mess. So that doesn't happen a whole lot anymore.
Yeah. So there's quite a few suggestions for you there, Shannon. If you're looking for something not Marvel or DC, just again, you have to be patient with the release schedule on anything that's not Marvel or DC, because nobody's as strict as they are. Which has its pros and cons. Nobody else has quite the staff that Marvel and DC do. But I definitely do recommend, Shannon, especially for you, I think you would really enjoy at least some of the covers that I've seen for Sex Criminals. So give that a Google and enjoy it.
Sex Criminals is really funny.
Yeah, that's all I've heard is great things. And it's been popping up a lot on some of the forums and stuff like that I visit. So, yeah, that's what I keep hearing. Nothing but good. Yeah, let's go ahead and move into Michael Branham. Is Deadpool becoming too mainstream and losing what made him a unique character?
This is an interesting one, because I wouldn't say that Deadpool hasn't changed since he got introduced. Because literally the first time he was introduced was in New Mutants, I think 98. Which was by your favorite person ever, Jesse, Rob Liefeld.
Yay! Rob Liefeld.
But he was super serious then. Like, he was, like, literally, like, the assassin mercenary. I mean, he was meant to riff off Deathstroke.
Right, because didn't Rob Liefeld also do Deathstroke? But he got fired from the project, I think.
Yeah, that's.
I want to say that was the history. Like, he got fired from the project. So he was like, well, screw it. I'm going to make Deathstroke, but bigger and cooler in the Marvel Universe. And then Deadpool was born. Because obviously they even have very similar names. Slade Wilson versus Wade Wilson. Like,
I know, yeah. It's so ridiculous.
They're supposed to be the same character.
Yeah, if you tried that now, I think you would get sued so hard.
That's almost certainly the case.
Right. So, and then he was very serious, and Joe Kelly did a run on Deadpool where he started to become kind of a little more silly, had the whole, like, Mexican food thing, did the fourth wall breaking deal, So that's, I think that's kind of when he started to become a little more serious. But I don't know. I think a lot of people now think that he's almost too silly. Like, he's just, like, gone kind of off the deep end.
Yeah, almost certainly. Well, it's in, like, the last, I would say the last, like, 5 or 6 years that Deadpool has really become super popular. And I want to say maybe that's what Michael's getting at, in that, you know, Deadpool used to just be this cool, obscure character that a few people knew and enjoyed. But now he's become just such a, like, everybody knows who Deadpool is. If you know anything about comic books, you know who Deadpool is.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's true. That is definitely the way he is now. Yeah, he's become, like, really, really popular comparatively. Because I think when I started reading comics, like, Deadpool was, like, the, if you liked comic, if you were into comics and you liked, like, the sillier ones, like, Deadpool was your guy. But, I mean, for, there was a while there where, I think there were at least 4 Deadpool ongoings. Yeah. Which is unheard of. And I mean, I think that time has passed. I think they've dialed it. I mean, they've obviously dialed it back. There's literally only 1 Deadpool ongoing right now. Well, I mean, there's technically 2 Secret Wars Deadpool things going on, but at least in the fall so far, there's literally only been 1 Deadpool title announced, unless you count him as a team member on other books. Which,
right. Well, I mean, whatever. If you do that, then when that point where he had 4 books is probably worth mentioning that I think he had 4 solo runs going at one time. Is right. What Chris was getting at. It's not like he was in 4 books that were ongoing. He was in 4 books featuring him.
Right. I mean, there's like the Deadpool core or something. And yeah. I mean, there was just so many. There was the whole, there was one that I think was just Merc with a Mouth. It was ridiculous. It almost made Batman look like he didn't have very many titles going on. Yeah. And I think that was a time where I just, I was sick of it. I was like, nope, I am not going to get on the Deadpool train. It's gotten a little better now with his overexposure, although we'll see. I think the movie is gonna make it like explode. I'm already not looking forward to how much Deadpool we're gonna get. I'm sure there's gonna be Deadpool variant covers and all sorts of crazy crap going on. Actually, maybe not, come to think of it, because guess who is making that Deadpool movie? It is not Marvel Studios.
No, it's definitely Fox.
It is definitely Fox, who Marvel tries to, like, kind of screw over every chance they get now, so they don't have good material for their movies. So maybe they won't do anything about it.
Yeah, I feel like Marvel is just at this point claiming as much as they can. But that actually does segue to our next question from John Massey. Good old John Massey, store manager at a store that will not be named. Will the Fantastic Four movie be a huge 90-minute piece of shit? And then he went ahead and spoiled at least my opinion by saying the answer is yes, because my answer is, in fact, yes.
I'm going to elaborate on that, as I am known to do on this podcast, and say why I think it's going to be bad. A, it looks gritty. And if one thing the Fantastic Four should be, it is definitely not gritty. They are like the goofiest members of the Marvel universe. You know, like, they've been around for forever and they do all sorts of wacky crap. B, it looks like Doctor Doom is again just not going to be the Doctor Doom we know and love. And I don't know. The one thing people are complaining about, I don't mind that they changed Johnny Storm to not be like a white guy. That's the part I'm completely like, sure, whatever. And some people are like really, really upset about that. And I do not think that's at all like why this movie is going to be bad. I just, you know, it seems like they're just like, oh, well, you know, we got to make one.
Yeah, that's my thing on it. Like, they're about to lose the license on Fantastic Four and it was going to go back to Marvel. So they needed to make a movie. And here it is.
God, it does not look good.
That is the worst reason ever to make a movie. Oh, we're about to lose the rights to that IP. Better make a movie so we can get them back. Yeah.
So bad.
And yeah, it's going to be a bad movie. I can almost guarantee it. And that kind of moves into Zach Price had a second question. There are rumors circulating that there might be an X-Men and Fantastic Four mashup. And my thoughts on that are hoorah, because I hope that finally causes Fox to tank and then sell the rights back to Marvel to recoup the money that was lost on that film.
God, we can only hope, right? I'd almost just like, if they're going to keep making X-Men movies, that, I mean, I guess that's fine with me. I think I'd prefer it to go to Marvel. I mean, I like, Bryan Singer makes pretty decent X-Men movies, so I'm not too upset about it. I think I just want, I want my X-Men to be back home where they belong. So Marvel will not shaft the X-Men quite as much, and maybe we can buy t-shirts and toys again.
Yeah, the X-Men have not gotten much love lately. Like, Marvel's gone hard on Inhumans.
They really have. I mean, like, they're still making comics because they can at least make comic money off the X-Men. But what is it? If they make any toys or merchandise, it all goes to Fox, even if it's, like, comic book related. When they made a Secret Wars shirt, they took the X-Men that were on the Secret Wars cover of the comic that got put on the shirt off and replaced them with other characters.
Which is, it's so silly. And I hate Fox so much for it, because, well, you know, I like my X-Men toys.
I know, I love the X-Men. But it was in the 90s when that Marvel was about to tank. They had to sell those rights just to, like, stay afloat.
Oh, I know. And yeah, like, for those of you, that there's a little brief history lesson for you. Why Fox got Fantastic Four and X-Men, why Sony got Spider-Man. Marvel was about to go down. And they wouldn't be the company that you all know and love today, but they sold rights to those movies to various companies just so that they could make, you know, enough money to last until they could get out of whatever rut they were in. And they came out of it hard.
90s were a rough time for comics, kiddos. Rough time.
Yeah, that was that boom where everybody was buying everything. And then suddenly they realized nothing was worth anything, and they stopped buying completely. It was a bad time.
I mean, the stories were also not great. Like, you know, you and I buy comics because we're like, oh, this sounds like a really fun comic. I never buy comics for the collectability, because, I mean, they print so many now that there's just no way, right?
Right. Like, you might stumble into a new IP that'll, like, really take off, but the chances of that are slim to none.
I think the last comic that's worth a fair bit of money was Walking Dead number one.
Yeah. They were thinking that Kick-Ass was going to be worth more, and it ended up not. There's some variant covers out there that came out recently that are worth a penny. But in general, yeah, nothing's really worth anything collectible-wise.
I know. I should have sold it. I had the whole first print. Sad times.
Yeah, because they're for a brief window. They were spiking.
They were, and then nope. Yeah, so that's funny. We segued a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. If they make an X-Men Fantastic Four vs. X-Men crossover, good luck, because those are two IPs that are kind of weird to cross over with, I think. That doesn't even have much in the comics, for that matter.
I was about to say, I don't think I've ever even seen, outside of events, I don't know that I've ever seen the Fantastic Four and the X-Men universe really cross over. And that actually takes us into the topic of the evening. There's a question that was asked last week about crossovers and events and just, you know, general information about that. And we figured, and we're going to, make an entire show about events and crossovers, because it is a huge part of comic books and there's so much information regarding events and crossovers. First of all, Chris is going to go ahead and define an event and a crossover, because they are, again, two very distinct things.
That's true. At least in the way that you and I think about it, an event, we would say, would be a group of comics that seems to encompass a lot of books. So, for example, when Marvel does a big summer event crossover, it's usually a miniseries unto itself. I think that's really what defines these events. They're usually books unto themselves. You know, like, it's not going to be like in Spider-Man and X-Men and Captain America. It's like Secret Wars is its own book, but it involves all the characters throughout the Marvel Universe. So that's really what I define an event as. And a crossover I define more as kind of a storyline that isn't contained just to one book, that maybe moves a little bit between books. For example, I'd call Spider-Verse more of a crossover. Then an event, well, actually, it doesn't really cross over between a whole lot of books. It's really just this Spider-Man. I guess Spider-Woman was involved in that. But, like, Battle of the Atom, it's kind of more of like a crossover than a big event, because it's not really a miniseries. It bounced between some X-Men titles. That one's kind of close to being maybe a little bit of both, because it did, I think, have two issues that were unto themselves. A lot of crossovers are like really little things where it's just maybe you get an issue here and there. For example, there was the Trial of Jean Grey for all new X-Men, where it was just like an all new X-Men, then a Guardians, then an all new X-Men, then a Guardians, and it was it. I think that's more of what I would consider the spirit of like a crossover.
Right.
Like smaller in scale and just like a couple books going back and forth. Death of the Family was kind of more of a Batman crossover, because it just had the Bat titles, and I don't even know if it had all the Bat titles.
It eventually did. Like, it had each one of them, but it wasn't like you didn't have to read most of the other Bat books. I think the only ones you needed to read, if I remember right, were obviously Batman, and Batgirl had quite a few books in there too.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But the rest of them just had like, this is happening and, you know, you should do whatever about this.
Sure. Sure. So that's what I would define as an event versus a crossover.
Yeah. And I mean, I would agree. And a lot of times too, whenever you get an event, at least in my definition, events usually have some sort of significant impact on the universe at whole, versus a crossover that just sort of like, it'll change things in independent story arcs, and it'll create new story arcs sometimes, but events almost always have a significant impact. Like, Secret Wars right now is one of the biggest ones to happen in a while, where a universe is literally dying and a new one is being created. A couple of other examples of what I would call a big event, like House of M, pretty much wiped out all of the extra mutants because there were far too many. Then some not so great ones, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Civil War had less of an impact, but it was definitely an event because it was a sort of an all-encompassing thing. And then, yeah, that's how I would describe an event. And sometimes you do get like individual books and crossovers as well. Like, I think Spider-Verse also had a couple of individual books. But I still wouldn't call that one an event, just because it literally only dealt with the spiders. Like, nobody else in the Marvel Universe was really involved.
Right, right. I'll agree with you there.
Yeah, and that actually can move on to, there's a few things that can make a crossover good, and a few things that can make a crossover bad. For me, with a crossover, at least a huge con of a crossover, like, I was reading All New X-Men during the Trial of Jean Grey, and basically what that meant for me, I was not reading Guardians of the Galaxy. So in addition to buying All New X-Men, and for other reasons Uncanny X-Men, because it's like a constant crossover, I also had to buy Guardians of the Galaxy so that I could keep up with the story of what was happening in the Trial of Jean Grey. So as far as my wallet was concerned, that was a big con for me, but it was a good story, so I wasn't too upset with it.
Yeah, I'd say, I think that's really one of the biggest things about crossovers is if you just don't want it, you know? If you don't want it, it's kind of tough, because your book's going to be in the crossover. And I get why they do that. They basically are like, hey, maybe you'll buy Guardians and like Guardians, and then you will spend more money on Guardians of the Galaxy, and then we'll make more money. So I get why they do that, but it's always frustrating. And that made me drop All New X-Men, because I was just sick of it. And that's one thing that I don't like about the crossovers, is when there are two books that constantly cross over and you have to buy both of them. That's very, very frustrating.
Yeah, and that frequently happens when you have the same writer, or even like also could have the same artist. But for example, the one I referred to earlier with Uncanny X-Men and All New X-Men, they were both Brian Michael Bendis, and he was basically writing one, assuming you were reading the other.
Yeah, and that's just, they want you to buy those books. And yeah, it's frustrating, and I get it. Like, I get their scheme.
And like on the plus side to it, especially like with a lot of comics, both of those are monthly titles. So instead of only getting one book per month and having to wait till the next month, you get two per month. But it goes back to like what Chris said, like if you don't want it, like I, you know, was into that storyline. So I ended up being pretty happy with having to buy two books because it meant I got double the X-Men each month and it was good story. But for people that don't care about any of the characters in one of the other books, it's really frustrating. I know a big one like that for me was actually Green Lantern on the New 52. Because going into the New 52, I was a big fan of Green Lantern. And I decided I also wanted to check out Red Lantern. Because I always thought the Red Lantern Corps was kind of cool. I always liked... oh god, I'm blanking on his name, Chris.
Atrocitus?
Yes, that's the guy. Because he's big and scary and awesome. So I decided to check out that book. But they ran so many crossovers between the other two Green Lantern books that they released at the time. The Green Lantern Corps with Guy Gardner and John. Who's the Black Lantern? Why can't I think of his name?
John Stewart.
Not to be confused with John Stewart of The Daily Show, who's a small white Jewish guy. John Stewart of the Green Lantern Corps, large black man. Yeah, that book, and then New Guardians, which was the Kyle Rayner book. And I don't care about Kyle Rayner, and I don't like Guy Gardner at all, so I didn't want either of those two books. And I kept having to buy the other two books because they were constantly running crossovers. So if you want to look at that, that's an example for me anyway of how a crossover can go bad, because I didn't want to buy four books. That's a lot of money. That was, you know, they were each $4 books. So that's $16 a month I was spending on one series.
That's really the thing about crossovers, is it just, if you don't want them, it's great if you were like loving these books, especially what's great is when you're reading the books already and then your the characters you love crossover. I feel like that happens really rarely though.
Very, very rarely. But yeah, like, it does happen when I was reading Spider-Man, and that actually has a crossover, a cool little mini crossover with Mark Waid's Daredevil. So that was kind of cool because, you know, reading both of those at the same time, you can kind of like, oh, hey, this is happening. It's neat. I like these guys. But that's, again, like Chris said, very, very rare. All right. And then I went ahead and talked about some stuff that makes crossovers bad. Chris, go ahead and hit us up with some events.
What makes events bad? Well, here's the thing about events. If the cool thing about events is usually if you don't want or if you don't care about them, you don't have to read them because most of the time they're miniseries. What's bad is when they change the status quo for your character in the middle of an event and then you don't find out about it in your main book till the event's over. And sometimes you get those banners on your books where it's like, it's a tie-in. That's what they love to say. It's like marginally related to the event, and then sometimes it pulls your characters kind of out of what they were doing to sort of put them more in line with this event. So that's something I'm really not fond of with events, and I really don't like it when, like, one of my favorite events of all time we'll talk about is Final Crisis, and I'm glad I was reading it because a very big thing happens with Batman in it, and it would have been really confusing if I was just reading Batman and then suddenly he's gone.
Yeah, because I think when you get back into the Batman book, suddenly you're reading Dick Grayson as Batman, right?
Yep, that pretty much happened.
So yeah, you don't read any Final Crisis, you're just reading Batman, and then your next issue of Batman after Final Crisis is over is like, suddenly Dick Grayson. What happened to Bats?
Where is my Batman?
Bruce Wayne? What happened to Bruce Wayne? Turns out he got knocked back in time with Omega Beams.
And that's not something you would really know reading Batman.
Exactly. But that was a fun little run, though. A little six-issue miniseries of Bruce Wayne coming back to the present. It was neat. But yeah, that's definitely a downside to an event. And I think, just in general for me anyway, what can make an event bad is I judge it by the impact it had on the universe.
Oh, and sure.
yeah, a lot of times, you know, it can be good, it can be bad. Like Civil War, going back to that event, it was a great event. It was fun to read. It was kind of like the Expendables of events, because it didn't have a very deep or honestly even interesting story. The premise was kind of cool, but that was about it. And it was just, it was fun to read because there was a lot of action. There was some comedy, neat stuff was happening, but not really deep. And then the final impact on the, like, the Marvel Universe as a whole was near negligible.
Yeah. I mean, it did, it changed some books. Like, we got like Avengers, the Initiative, the whole Initiative thing happened. And that happens a lot when you're done with an event. Suddenly there's like a banner over all your books. Like the Initiative was the thing. And it's like, look, we're going to have some cool government sponsored Avengers teams. Or after Secret Invasion, it was Dark Reign was the thing. And then, but it's, I mean, it's a cyclical nature of comics. It's just, it's only going to stick around for so long. Yeah. Civil War, especially. I mean, Civil War had, was like a cool idea, and the art, I mean, the, I can't say anything, like the art was great. It's just kind of the rest of it.
Yeah. And I mean, it had one of my favorite Punisher moments of all time. And honestly, it has one of the, well, two different parts of the Civil War book for Captain America are like two of the biggest quoted, I guess, Captain America parts. The Civil War is where the whole when everybody, like when you're standing up for what you believe is right and everybody tells you to move, you know, you stand your ground and say, no, you move, like that whole line. That was from Civil War. Sure. And then, yeah, going back to that Punisher moment was basically Punisher comes down, sees Cap dealing with a couple of enemies that was helping his side, and Punisher just blam, blam, and no more bad guys that were trying to be good guys.
Very uncompromising.
Yes. The Cap just beats the shit out of Punisher, and Punisher has a line in there. I think it's something about, like, I would never fight you or something like that, or we're the same, or I don't know what it was exactly. But that's another one that's quoted pretty heavily.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's so impact is a big thing for me. It makes an event good, and I mean, usually what makes an event is, you know, impact. But yeah, favorite crossover, Chris, what you got?
My favorite crossover. Oh, favorite crossover. Ooh, this is a tough one. Probably Sinestro Core War. It had its ups and downs, just like a lot of Geoff Johns stuff, but it was really interesting for a while, and I felt like it was definitely never boring. And it was a small crossover. You really just had to get Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, and you still got a complete story. So that was pretty good. So I'm a pretty big fan of Sinestro Core War. Especially, it was at a time when I was just coming into comics, and it was just I'd not known much about Green Lantern, and it just blew me away. So I was a big fan of it at that point in time. What's your favorite crossover, Jesse?
My favorite crossover is probably going to have to be Spider-Verse, because mostly just because I read it recently and I really, really enjoyed it. Like, it's the most recent crossover I've read. I really enjoyed it. I talked about it, I think, last week as well. Good series just in general. So I won't go on with a whole bunch of extra details, since I did, I think, go into pretty extreme detail last time. But yeah, that was Spider-Verse, good stuff. Like, the books weren't too hard to keep up with. There were a couple that you could pick up for tie-ins, but really, if you got the Amazing Spider-Man book and the Spider-Verse individual books, you could get the whole story. But you could get the basically backstory and see exactly what happened whenever they reference stuff that the other books do. Like, they did a Scarlet Spider's book, which was all about the clones. They did the Spider-Woman, but they were kind of calling it Spider-Women. That was about just the Jessica Drew, the new character Cindy Moon as Silk. And there was another Spider-Girl there, but I think it was Spider-Girl, but I don't remember her actual name. But yeah, it was good. It was a good crossover. You didn't have to get every book to get the whole story, so it was a little easier on the wallet if you didn't want it. And yeah, I overall just enjoyed it. Yeah. And then we'll go ahead and move right along to what is your favorite event, Chris?
My favorite event of all time is Final Crisis. And I could talk about Final Crisis for a long time because I think it perfectly showcases the DC universe. It's got like everybody. It's got New Gods. It's got the Justice League. It's got the Justice Society. It's got the return of Barry Allen, which I know some people were pissed off about, but I loved, especially the way it happened. It's got some like 1,500 different Supermans because it uses the multiverse, and which is also a cool thing about DC. And it has some really weird, obscure characters like Renee Montoya as the Question. And I'm kind of I like always love the Question and have never actually read a story just about the Question.
Yeah, I'm in that boat too.
I'm like, man, the Question seems cool. Yeah. And then it has the death of Batman, which literally like destroyed me. I read the end of that. And I'm like, what? Because like months before, Batman RIP had been a thing. And I loved Batman RIP. It was real weird and cool. But I thought Batman was going to die at the end of it since it was called Batman RIP. And then he dies in a comic called Final Crisis. And I was like, what?
And what a scene that is, too. Because, like, that happens. And then you're like, oh, it's Batman. He'll be okay. And then you see Superman holding his corpse.
I know, but it's pretty corpsey. It is...
It's very corpsey. I'm sure, like, if you've ever looked up pictures of Batman and Superman, you have seen this picture. It is gruesome. And especially, like, you know, like you said, you don't expect Batman to die. And then he dies.
And then he very much dies.
Well, except for the whole going back in time thing, which, I mean, I'm sorry for anyone that was wanting to read that and I spoiled it for you, but it's still worth a read.
Plus, what have you been doing? Final Crisis has been around for a while.
It has been around for a really long time. And again, if you hadn't had that picture spoiled for you by now, like, even if you think you haven't, search for that picture and you'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right. I've seen that because I know you have. I promise you, you have.
Right.
But yeah, that is a really good event. For me, it was really difficult to pick a favorite event. There are so many good ones. Final Crisis is great. And I'm going to go ahead and throw a plot twist. Despite the shit I just gave it, I think Civil War is one of my favorite events. Really? People that know me know that I'm a big fan of popcorn flicks. Like, the cheesier, the better. I'm never going to say that it's a good movie, but if I can sit down, have a good time, watch some action, and just enjoy myself, then I call it a win.
If you say so, Jesse. I did. To be fair, at the time, I really enjoyed Civil War. I think in retrospect, my love for Civil War has faded, but I still love Final Crisis. I was racking my brain the other day when we were trying to think of our favorite events. If it still stays good, Secret Wars might be one of my favorites.
Yes,
because so far it's excellent.
Civil War is right, like, if Civil War, I'm with you, if it stays there, it will replace everything, because it's got everything I want. It's a good story, it's got a massive impact on the universe, changing up all kinds of stuff, it's got every character that you know and love, and it's just, it spawned a lot of extra books that you can read if you're into it. It's really good. I'm really, really digging this event, and just the Secret Wars standalone miniseries has been incredible.
Yeah, it has been really, really good. The one problem that I have with a lot of events in general, actually, is that they, like, a lot of events start really good, and then that's just kind of it. Like, then they kind of peter out. Like, I loved the beginning of Secret Invasion, and by the end of it, I was just not even wanting to read it anymore.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Like, I find that that does happen in a lot of those events where they, I don't know if it's because they just couldn't agree on it or whatever, but they have a lot of trouble ending things.
Yeah, and I always hate the ones that the, that, like, they always have that panel with all the heroes charging the bad guy. I'm just kind of tired of that.
It's happened too many times, and you really gotta wonder, like, how many beings could there be that could really stand up to all of the heroes of Earth, whether you're talking Marvel or DC.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, well, I think that's actually going to... Oh, wait, no, we did want to talk about... Real quick, there's another question we didn't get to last week. I think it was also from Asa about what the what our thoughts on characters taking over the mantles of previously existing characters. I think that was roughly the wording. Yeah, and that usually does happen, and I think that's why we wanted to save it for this, or that frequently happens like during or after an event or crossover where like something big kind of happens.
It happens so much. Jesse, I don't know if you've ever read Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is the original DC event, like their very first one.
Yes.
That happened like 15 times just in that event. Man, I don't know. So if it's done well and if it's an interesting character, I usually love it. Like, I loved Sam Wilson before he was Captain America. I always thought he was pretty cool as the Falcon. So now that he's Captain America, completely fine with it. I never mind that they change the name as long as it's an interesting character. I think that's, like, I know that's kind of a short and quick answer to it, but that's, like, bottom line. As long as they write me an interesting story about it, it usually doesn't piss me off. I love Thor, but I don't care that Thor is a gal right now because I'm really hooked on the story.
And yeah, that's another thing. Like, there are really two parts of it for me. Like, if it's, you know, done well, like the transition is done well, and if the story is there. Like, if they just changed it because they wanted to shake things up and there was no purpose, no story, nothing, they just, yeah, we're gonna do this. I don't like it. I'm not a fan when that happens. But like, one of the other examples that he brought up was Danny Rand as Daredevil. And Danny Rand, for those of you that don't know, is Iron Fist. Yes.
Yeah, the immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah, I keep wanting to call him Dragon Fist for some reason. I know that's his little logo. I don't know why. But either way, yes, Iron Fist. That happened actually during the Civil War storyline where Daredevil was outed for the 35th time as Matt Murdock. And to really throw people off his trail and kind of, you know, go back on that to try and provide proof, Matt Murdock had Danny Rand sign up as Daredevil for a little while so that they could be seen, you know, simultaneously in different places so people would know that Matt Murdock wasn't Daredevil. And I feel like that was, you know, that was an interesting story for it, like an interesting premise for making Danny Rand Daredevil. And if I recall, like, I actually didn't read any of that story back then, but I recall it being like fairly well received, like the brief run with Danny Rand as Daredevil. I don't know, Chris, you may have more information on that for me.
I actually don't in this case. I haven't read that run. I mean, it's Ed Brubaker and people love Ed Brubaker's run of Daredevil. So I expect that's no exception. That's actually that's on my reading list that I'm going to start going through all the really good Daredevil runs after I'm done with Fantastic Four and Walter Simonson's Thor. So I will be able to get back to you guys at some point about that.
All right, Chris, our retro comic, I guess, reader now, since he's getting all caught up. I'll eventually get that Marvel Universe application and start doing some backlog, but... It's I've got to get through my current stock before I can think about doing that.
Oh, sure.
But yeah. All right. Well, hopefully everybody's satisfied with their answers. Hopefully everybody learned a little bit about crossovers and events. Maybe you got some more reading you want to do. Maybe we brought up more questions that you want to ask. If so, check us out next week. We'll be doing the same thing. Topic to be determined. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to talk about next week, but... Sure,
we will
fun.
Talk about something.
Between the two of us, we could talk about quite a bit of stuff for an hour.
That's true.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great night.